Welcome to our Sunday service for February 4th, 2008. In the spirit of gratitude and respect, we acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional land we gather. Good morning. We are happy that you have joined us on this blessed day. My name is Dan Klimke, and I am honored to serve as your worship associate this morning. We welcome all of you to our service, especially those of you who are searching for a spiritual home. And though I used these exact same words at the last service I was worship associate at, I think they're appropriate for today's first Sunday as we focus on interdependence. As Unitarian Universalists, we envision a world in which our interdependence calls us to love and justice, and we welcome all who desire to transform ourselves and our world through compassionate action.
I love that line, for all gathered here and those far away. Today on CUC Sunday, when I think of those far away, I think of other Unitarian Universalists in the CUC, the Canadian Unitarian Council, who are lighting their chalices also this morning, from Nanaimo to Kamloops, Edmonton, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, Toronto, Montreal, and Halifax. And all of us here in Canada are joined by other Unitarians and Unitarian Universalists around the world in places as diverse as the States, India, and Romania. We are a part of a larger whole. This month's honored volunteer and today's chalice lighter is someone who is all about making connections between Unitarian Universalist communities. He's a member here, as well as at Capitol, our sister congregation downtown. And he's worked with UUs on the UVic campus, as well as on the CUC board. Peter, will you please kindle the flame of our faith? If there are any kids or youth still out there in the chairs, you can come forward at this time. Our new Director of Spiritual Exploration and Learning, Aaron, will be leading the time for all ages.
Good morning. So as Reverend Malora just said, this month our theme is interdependence. That's kind of a big word. Do you guys know what interdependence means? Yeah? You forgot? Well, it is a tricky word. But what I usually think of first is the people who are on my team, the people who I can depend on. Can you think of people who you depend on? Yeah, Deanna? Your daddy? Your auntie Anna? Yeah? Sophia? All your family? Yeah. So we all depend on our families and our friends, but also we depend on people who are sometimes a little bit further away, like the person who drives the bus, or the person who works in the store, or the postman. Yes, Louis? And your cousin, yeah. So, and we also depend on people that we don't see at all. People sometimes who live in different countries, who grow our food, and who make the games we like to play, for example. And then we depend on people who do things we don't even understand. Like, make airplanes stay in the air. Do you know how they do that? I don't. Also, tell them where to go. I mean, that seems really tricky to me. You know how they say? How? Oh. Wow. So. So airplanes stay in the air because there's more air underneath than on top? Oh, okay. So there we go. We learned something new every day. Also, I don't know how they tell the airplanes where to go because there's no street signs in the sky. Tiana? Oh, so they first get up with a lot of motion and going really fast. Yeah. Okay. They do go really fast. But once they're up in the sky, there's no signpost to tell them. If they want to go to California, for example, there's no signpost. And you can't just give them directions, like the pilot, and say, well, just when you get to the Red Barn, then turn right, like when we come here. And they're, you know, you can't give a landmark. I don't think it would work if you were like, well, just go straight until you come to the cloud that looks like my grandma, and then turn south. Like, that wouldn't really work, would it? No, because mostly the clouds change all the time, right? So if it looks like my grandpa now, by the afternoon it might look like a giraffe. And that's not going to be very helpful. So, you get cookies on the plate? You can get a cookie and a cracker if you're really lucky. It depends which airline, though. But luckily, I don't need to know how to fly the airplane. But I have to depend on the people who do know how to do that to get me on my to go and visit my family. Oh, that's cool. So maybe your Uncle Chris can drive me the next time I go on an airplane. That's right. Yeah. So then there's other things we depend on that aren't even people. Can you give me some examples of that? An imaginary friend, okay. Other things? Yes, Athena. Pardon? The internet, yeah, we depend on that a lot these days. The air that keeps the plane afloat, yeah. Water. Animals, yeah. So there's lots of things we depend on that are not people. So when you think of all the things we depend on, there's a really long list. And then when you think of all the things that those things depend on, the list gets even bigger. And it's like, if you imagine all those connections, what I see in my mind is this web of connections that end up taking over the whole world and even out to space. And so for me, that's what interdependence means, all those connections. But as UUs, we have a special connection with each other. We've made a covenant or a promise that we can depend on each other, that we have each other's backs. So we have this connection with the people in the room, and as Reverend Melora said, the people all across Canada, and we share our connection by doing a special thing, which Reverend Melora just mentioned. Can anybody tell me what that is? No? Rocks? Sometimes rocks? Tiana? Light? Lighting the chalice? Oh, life. Well, life, yes. But also lighting the chalice like Peter did for us this morning. So, this month we're going to do a special project that are going to help us get to know the other children across Canada, particularly in Montreal and Ottawa. We're going to make a package for them about our church. We're going to draw pictures, write stories, take photos, maybe even make some videos. And we're going to send it to them. And they're going to make a project. And they're going to send it to us. So at the end of the month, we can all learn more about them. Does that sound like fun? Yeah? Okay. So let's go and get started with that.
Today, all of our offering contributions, including undesignated cash, will be sent to the Canadian Unitarian Council, the CUC, to support the Sharing Our Faith program, which offers grants to congregations applying for projects that they might not otherwise afford to undertake, but which enhance ministry, growth, and/or outreach for that congregation and for the Unitarian Universalist movement in Canada. As one of the larger congregations, we like to support the efforts of the smaller congregations who can use these funds for projects that attract new members. Our own congregation has received two grants from the fund, one in 2014 for our sanctuary projector, and in 2017 to partly fund the Servetus Vespers which was written by our music director and Reverend Fran Dearman and performed locally as well as for our winter solstice service. Since 2001, through the generosity of congregations and members, the Sharing Our Faith program has awarded over $181,000, fostering relationships and a sense of community and connection among and between our member congregations and communities. Our relationship with the larger Canadian Unitarian Universalist movement is a gift. Our generous support today is an expression of our gratitude for the larger community and our hope that together we can serve the needs of our congregations, our communities, and our world.
Breathe in. Breathe out.
We need one another when we mourn and would be comforted.
We need one another when we are in trouble and afraid.
We need one another when we are in despair, in temptation, and need to be recalled to our best self again.
We need one another when we would accomplish some great purpose and cannot do it alone.
We need one another in the hour of our success, when we look for someone to share our triumphs.
We need one another in the hour of defeat, when with encouragement we might endure and stand again.
We need one another when we come to die, and we would have gentle hands prepare us for the journey.
All our lives we are in need, and others are in need of us.
Blessed be.
A story of interdependence. Two emotions were running through me, one of amazement at this incredible natural beauty in front of me, the other, sheer, utter terror. I stood at the edge of a crevasse, a crack in a glacier, about 14,000 feet up Mount Rainier in Washington State. The color of this chasm blended from pure white snow at the top to the clearest of crystals, then to a radiant shade of light blue that darkened and darkened to pure black, hundreds of feet down the sheer glassy walls. Now, it wasn't a large crack, only about 2 feet wide and maybe a foot and a half step up to the other side, but to me it seemed as large as the Grand Canyon. With a thin but strong rope joining me to my friends, I made the leap, successfully, as you might see. When glacier climbing, your team is roped up together. Should one fall, you are physically connected to the others who will, you hope, catch you. I got you, you got me. We would often practice in lower risk areas to make our reaction to a fall automatic, without thinking. And seeing each other's abilities gives us trust in each other. A critical thing, though, when on the mountain, you have to remain separated at some distance with very little slack between you. If someone should slip when there's too much slack, they'd quickly accelerate to the point where they would pull the whole team off of the mountain. But if you're too tight, you're constantly jerking each other around as you're trying to hike up the mountain. Now, there are some amazing alpinists who climb the world's highest and most dangerous peaks solo. The reward of doing it yourself may be great, but the risks are devastatingly greater. With the common goal in sight, we struggle together, testing our strength, our fortitude, sometimes miserable, oftentimes difficult, suffering together, but also enjoying our camaraderie and the beauty of the incredible view from Mount Hood in Oregon to the mountains of BC. When the first person reaches the top of the pitch, they set up a safe anchor, turn, and help pull and guide the rest of the team up, calling out words of encouragement until everyone has reached the top.
We need one another. Interdependence is scientific fact, ecologically, economically, socially, emotionally. What you do, how you are in the world, affects those around you, and others' actions affect you. We need one another, not just our friends and family. We are interdependent with people we don't even choose and may not even know. I hadn't really thought about that part until I put together the sermon on GVAT a couple of weeks ago. GVAT, Greater Victoria Acting Together, is a coalition of civic organizations, now including our congregation, that work together toward the common good in Victoria. In that service, I pointed out that in the olden days, people used to live more localized lives. They used to learn, play, and work all in the same neighborhoods, supporting one another through the institutions of civil society, schools, faith groups, community organizations. So connections built up naturally, and when something was wrong in your neighborhood or your city, people knew who to talk to, who to work with to get it fixed. Now, many of us are more isolated. We may choose to stay in touch with particular friends and family across the continent, but we're less likely to know our neighbors, the local police officer, postal carrier, city councilors. We are less connected with those whose lives are interdependent with ours. We are less connected with those whose lives are interdependent with ours. GVAT works to strengthen those connections and harness the power of those who are independent to work toward the common good. So the thing that strikes me when I now consider our interdependence is this. We are interdependent with people we don't choose and may not even know, and this is especially so when we work together toward a common purpose. Like here, in a congregation, some of you are friends with each other, but I'm guessing that no one knows everyone in this room. And yet, we are connected by common values. In fact, we are united with all Unitarian Universalists across Canada and beyond by the covenant that our choir just sang, those seven principles. Our shared goal is to live these values in the world, to stand up for the inherent worth and dignity of every person, to care for the web of life that holds us all. To do this work, we need each other. We are interdependent with people we don't choose and might not yet know. So I wonder, what does this require of us? What is the spiritual work we need to do to get closer to Dan's mountaintop, roped together as we are, hanging on one another's strengths and limitations? Last week, Reverend Shauna and I went to a continuing education conference with Unitarian Universalist ministers from across Canada and the States. For me, it's kind of like being a layperson in a congregation. We worship together, take intensive workshops, connect over meals with longtime colleagues and people we've just met. We learn, we discuss, we share our personal experiences and professional insights. We use all of this, like you do, as fodder to help us grow into our best selves, our best ministerial selves, to learn how to best offer our own particular gifts in service of our larger shared purpose, to live and help others live our UU values in the world. You know the global context we're in, the xenophobia, transphobia, misogyny, and subtle and not so subtle racism that has been in the air of late. Unitarian Universalists throughout our association have been counteracting hate and siding with love with renewed fervor. We have lawn signs that say things like, "We love our neighbors, immigrant, LGBTQ, of color, with disabilities, of all and any faiths." And, "We believe love is love, Black Lives Matter,
climate change is real, no human being is illegal, women's rights are human rights, all genders are whole, holy, and good. I wish we'd make a Canadian version that included Indigenous rights. Maybe that's coming. UU, stand up for our values in the world. We've also been examining our own UU movement, our own institutions. In particular, we've been struggling with how to grow beyond the white cultural norms that unintentionally shut out people of color. This is what people have been calling white supremacist culture, not white supremacist people. Those are the people who think white people are better than people of color. We're talking about white supremacist culture, cultural norms that say that white ways of being are superior to non-white ways of being. As I've said before, we absorb this stuff without even meaning to. For example, an assumption that a white way of doing things quickly and efficiently is better than an Indigenous way of taking time to do things. Dismantling the white supremacist culture wrapped up in our own UU institutions is tough and painful work. And it was a theme that ran through many of the worship services at this particular UU Ministers Conference. Many of our worship leaders were from non-dominant groups: African American, Latina, transgender, Vietnamese American, queer, multiracial. The stories and insights were rich, deep, and thought-provoking. We were challenged, for example, to re-examine our hymns. When and in what context is it appropriate for whom to sing African American songs about freedom? I know I've felt, maybe some of you have as well, an uncertainty, sometimes an internal cringe, when a bunch of white people sing, "I'm on my way to the freedom land," or "I wish I knew how it would feel to be free," or even "We shall overcome." Especially if no one has explained the history of the song, the story of the people from which it came, or named which freedom we are currently singing about. At the conference, worship leaders challenged us to consider who is the we in our speech and in our songs. When does the we implicitly indicate people who are white or of the dominant culture? And when does they indicate those who are oppressed or less fortunate? The hymn, "Wake Now My Senses," for example, speaks of striving for their hardship to end. What does that do to a person whose identity is marginalized by society to be labeled them instead of we by their own religious community? "Gather the Spirit," says, "our trials in this light appear all the same." How might that sentence land for a marginalized person? Some among us feel distinctly, systematically, institutionally disadvantaged and oppressed. Our trials in this light do not appear all the same. Examining our language and how it includes or excludes, examining how we bring in multicultural stories and sources without misappropriating, it's all good stuff. It's also hard, because there's a lot of nuance involved, and there's seldom a clear-cut right way to do it. I am a person who likes things to be clear-cut. I want someone to tell me the right way to do something so I can do it right and think of myself as good. The more I learn about white supremacist culture, by the way, the more I suspect that very tendency of mine is itself a characteristic of white supremacist culture. It's wrapped up in perfectionism, the need to be right, the need to be in control. So my buttons get pushed and my defenses go up, especially when I feel like someone has good intentions, when they're trying to do the right thing, but then they get criticized for their failing. There were some bumpy moments along those lines during our conference. A worship leader of Latina descent held a critical lens to the way in which an earlier worship leader used Spanish in a responsive reading. He had joked a bit about his own poor Spanish pronunciation and then tried to assure us, get who us is, right? The we, mostly non-Spanish speakers, that it was our effort in reading the unfamiliar language that mattered the most. So she said, "I disagree that effort makes all the difference when a room full of mostly white UUs speak or sing in Spanish." And she cautioned all of us to be wary of token performative multiculturalism. Using a grab bag of sources from various cultures without being grounded in relationship with the people from any of those cultures. The points of critique were valid and were much deeper and more insightful than I have time to go into here. It was all good stuff for me to ponder and examine. But I also got a little triggered, as my daughter says. I got a little triggered. I felt so bad for the poor critiqued worship leader. He was trying to be inclusive by using Spanish. And yes, he could have done so more artfully, more respectfully. But I felt bad for him that he was called on it in front of all those people. I wonder if any of you have felt something like this, defensive of well-meaning white folks. It sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole because, of course, I was taking it very personally. What if I was the one who had made the mistake? That would be unbearable. See previous note about perfectionism being a characteristic of white supremacist culture. How are we supposed to do this, I lamented, if there's no clear-cut right way? Why should I even bother trying? You see what's happening, though? In my defensiveness, it's becoming more about me and preserving myself from guilt and embarrassment and being wrong. It's becoming more about me than it is about learning how to be inclusive, how to be in authentic, respectful relationship with people from cultures different from my own. It reminded me a bit of an insight that came from the play Home that Diana Smith and members of our congregation co-hosted a couple weeks ago. How many of you went? Yeah, so some of you were there. It was an interactive play that examined the legacy of residential schools through various character stories. In the Friday night version of the play, there was a scene co-created by the invited participation of an audience member in which a white settler mom confesses under duress that she and her husband knew all along the identity of the birth mother of their adopted son, who is now 18 or so. He knew he was indigenous, but not until this moment did he know his birth name or the people from which he came. In the scene, the son is shocked and angry and presumably feels betrayed that his adoptive parents kept the secret of his own identity. But we don't really get to hear from him much because the white mom takes up all this space saying how sorry she is, explaining why she did what she did, and laying out the parameters of how they should have this conversation now, silencing the father, telling him that the conversation needs to be about their son and his needs and not about them, the parents. She makes these points over and over again in an anxious, weeping, apologetic frenzy. It takes her forever to wind down and stop talking. Despite her spoken wishes, she did, in her anxiety, make it all about her. The director asked us to look at this symbolically. If the white mom is a symbol for the white settler Canadians, and if the son is a symbol for the indigenous people of this land, what parallels might we draw? The audience said things like, "The white person does all the talking. There's no room for the indigenous voice." It's all about the white people's guilt and how sorry they are. It overshadows the indigenous person's experience of pain. The white person takes charge and tries to make the rules about how they're going to have the conversation. When the white people finally do stop dominating the conversation, as they have been for centuries, they want the indigenous people to talk right now in this specific way. By giving the white guilt so much space, the conversation can too easily turn to how to not make the white people feel bad, instead of examining the ugly truth of what happened, who it hurt, and how to begin to build toward healing. The audience was brilliant. Talk about the wisdom of the collective. I carried an awareness of that white woman character as I was spinning out, mentally defending the white worship leader who'd made mistakes while trying to use Spanish in worship. Even as I went down the spiral of my own defensiveness and worry about protecting wounded white person feelings, I knew on another level that my spiral was not constructive, and in fact, was distracting from the larger, more important work at hand. My defensiveness was a way of shutting down, withdrawing. But I need to do the opposite. I need to open up, listen to the insights and experiences of my colleagues, especially those in marginalized groups. I need to listen, learn, and risk making mistakes myself. Later that week, there was another thought-provoking but also healing worship service led by Reverend Elizabeth Nguyen, who describes herself as, quote, a queer Vietnamese-American and proud Midwesterner. She told this story about how, in preparation for a big holiday feast, she had worked in the kitchen on this huge culinary endeavor, cochinita pibil, a roast pork dish from the Yucatan. It required special trips to markets all over town, learning how to prune a peach tree to get wood for smoking, and 12 hours of painstaking, tending, and coaxing. She describes how at last she peels back the banana leaves to reveal the treasure that she's created and finds instead an inedible lump of charred disaster. She says, quote, she sat on the ground pulling angrily at the burned banana leaves and declared, "Nothing is worth doing ever," in a voice that she says she's 100% sure her mother would have recognized from age 3, age 12, age 18, and maybe even 21. She yelled through her tears, "Why should we ever try anything?" End quote. Yes, we mess up and we throw fits. Perhaps we get defensive and we want to give up. But we don't. Eventually, we get back up and we try again, because the work is important. And we can't do it alone. I need those fellow UUs to challenge me and encourage me and mess up with me and figure it out with me. We need one another. A song recurred in worship throughout the week of our conference. It's a gospel song by Hezekiah Walker. The song referenced God, but you don't have to believe in God to get the power of the underlying message.
I need you. You need me. We're all a part of God's body.
Whether you call that thing that connects us God, or the power of love, or the web of life, we are interdependent. This is what we sang together, all these UU ministers grappling with the hard work of how to live out our values as best we can.
I need you. You need me. You are important to me. I need you too. survive.
That last line has a double meaning. Both, I need you to survive, and I need you for me to survive. We sang that, and I thought, darn it, it's true. I need those colleagues. None of us can see the whole ourselves. It's the same in congregations, the same in Unitarian Universalism as a whole. We can't properly diagnose, let alone fix, any of these societal problems as individuals, but collectively, we can get closer. We need one another when we would accomplish some great purpose and cannot do it alone. Doing this well requires us to face two spiritual challenges. The first is to open ourselves to the wisdom and experience of others, even those we didn't choose, even those we don't yet know. For some of us, the challenge involves checking our egos, giving up the need to know everything, the need to be right, the desire to control. Some of you may have felt this letting go in our strategic planning process. No one of us can know at the beginning how it's all going to turn out. We have to collect and weave together all our different perspectives. The challenge of opening ourselves to the wisdom of others requires a letting go. It also requires humility, a willingness to make mistakes and allow that others will fumble too. It requires us to resist defensiveness and to resist giving up when it gets hard. I should note that it's not always hard. Sometimes when we open ourselves to the wisdom of one another, very cool things happen. That's the joy of interdependence. Our congregation has built some great programs based on ideas and models we got from the larger UU world, most recently our Soul Matters themed-based ministry and our Worship Associate program. And within this congregation, consider the things that have recently come from being open to the wisdom, the innovative ideas of one another. The Servetus Vespers, the Nature Playground, Home, the interactive play on truth and reconciliation, an upcoming plan to host Indigenous artists in residence here at church, and our participation in GVAT, Greater Victoria Acting Together. Some of you had great innovative ideas, others pitched in to do the work to make them happen, and the congregation was the fertile ground in which they all blossomed.
I need you, you need me, you are important to me, I need you to survive.
I said there were two spiritual challenges inherent in our state of interdependence. One is being open to the wisdom of others. The other spiritual challenge is to be gentle with one another in conveying our own insights. There's another line in that song.
I won't harm you with words from my mouth.
When I heard that lyric, I thought, oh, but we do. We harm one another with words from our mouths all the time. And yet, it's still important that we set our intention again and again to do better.
I won't harm you with words from my mouth. I love you. I need you to survive.
Reverend Wayne Walder, who serves Neighborhood UU Congregation in Toronto, says this: we will need to develop some skills and trust each other. Interdependence is not a magic wand to be waved in fantasy. It is first an awareness, and then a skill. Awareness and skill. It takes intention. It takes practice. To that end, you may wish to consider two programs Reverend Shauna is leading this month, both listed in your order of service: Difficult Conversations and Enriching Our Ties. Check them out. We are interdependent here in this congregation. The more we can strengthen those connections and build relationships, The more we can open ourselves to the wisdom of others, the more we practice being gentle with one another, the closer we will get to achieving our common purpose, the better we will be at living our values in the world, standing up for the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and caring for the web of life that holds us all.
You are important to me. I need you to survive.
Blessed be. All our lives we are in need, and others are in need of us. So friends, let's be open, kind, and gentle with one another. So may it be.